I know it has been a long time, but I want you to think about when you were growing up. Now, some of you, it hasn't been as long as others, but you know, for a lot of us, it's been quite a while. I want you to think about when you were growing up. Now, I don't remember a whole lot about when I was young, but what I do remember has been reinforced by things I have experienced as a grown-up. And overall, I know that my parents loved me, my parents provided for me, and that the roles my parents played were different. Now, I think to some extent it might be seen better in this over-the-top exaggeration I've heard several different times with small differences, but just imagine with me for a moment. You've got a small child who falls down and they scrape up their knee just a little bit. And the mom sees it, and the mom comes running over to the child, picks them up, takes them in the house, and gets out the antiseptic and washes it out real good. And then they get the antibacterial cream and a Band-Aid, and they put that on the child. And they comfort them, and they encourage them that it'll be okay. Now, the dad sees the kid fall down in the middle of the road, fall off their bike, slide for 20 feet, both knees look like hamburger, and he comes up to them, takes a look down, and says, rub some dirt in it, let's go. Yeah, somebody had to shake it off. Yeah, you've heard it before. Mothers and fathers, they play a significantly different role. They're both important. Neither one is more important than the other, but they both play an important role in the rearing of children. Now, in Paul's day, there were some social ideas of what a mom's work was, as well as what a dad's role in the family were. Now, given they were a little different from the Jewish viewpoint and which Paul had been raised in, and the Greek and the Roman ideas of what those were. But in this morning's passage, what we're going to see is Paul building off of, especially, well, actually kind of both of those, the Jewish idea and the Greek and Roman ideas of what it meant to be a mother and a father. And he's going to tell, and he's going to write to the church at Thessalonica, and he's going to use those two roles in the family to describe, to explain to us what it was that he and Paul and Silas were doing in the churches which they would plant as they traveled around what was then Asia Minor and around the Mediterranean Sea. For instance, Paul, like a good Jew, would say, I've worked hard. The Greeks and the Romans would look at that and say, only the lowest class work. So Paul, please don't say that. Or they would say, you know, we were like a mother, a nursing mother to you. And the Greeks and the Romans would say, Paul, we hire nurses for that. Don't tell us that. But Paul is saying, and Paul is going to show us, that there are parts of both the role of a mother and the role of a father that were important for them and important for how the church would do ministry in a local context and how they would do evangelism and training of what it meant to look like Christ. And since Paul has already told us that we are to some extent, supposed to emulate him, even though Paul is describing Silas and Timothy's roles, I think that there is something for us to learn. And so this is what Paul writes in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, beginning with the third part of verse 7. It says, just as a nursing mother cares for her children, so we cared for you because we loved you so much. We were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well. Surely you remember, brothers and sisters, our toil and our hardship. We worked night and day in order not to be a burden to anyone while we preached the gospel of God to you. You are witnesses, and so is God, of how holy, righteous, and blameless we were among you who believed. For you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God, who calls you into his glorious kingdom. And so while Paul's purpose, or at least not his only purpose, is to tell the Thessalonians that they should live out their calling like him, he certainly is not saying less. For after all, we learn to do life first, and most of the time in our greatest capacities, from our parents. And so Paul begins this section, actually he began with part of what we looked at last week when he said we became infants. We became like those who aren't looking for anything. But this week, what we're looking at, he begins by saying that he and his fellow missionaries came and they acted like a mother. They acted like a mother amongst the church at Thessalonica. Now, there are some things that are true about moms. Moms have to work differently than a dad does. Now, dads do their work, but moms do their work. And Paul says, we came, and like a mother, we worked among you day and night. We worked among you day and night. Now, Paul isn't saying that they were working unceasingly. It isn't like they were in Thessalonica for several weeks and they worked 24 hours around the clock to meet everybody's needs. But Paul was able to look at it and say that everything that they were doing in Thessalonica, whether they were working at the day in the shops, where Paul, we find out in other places, probably worked as a leather worker, making tents, making other things out of leather, repairing leather goods. But he worked during the day, but also he worked into the nights, probably working during the day to provide and working at night to present the gospel, or working during the day and presenting the gospel to some as he was working, and working longer so that he could continue to make those ends meet. But yet, I've noticed something about moms. Moms don't sleep well. Dad, baby cries in the middle of the night, generally don't hear it. But the mom does. The mom has different responsibilities around the home. There are things that she does, and she works, and you know, today more than in the past, moms are working outside of the home. But either way, you're looking at moms who schedule revolves around this little infant. Because especially in Paul's day, they had to nurse those babies. Yeah, there wasn't a formula shortage, because there wasn't formula. You know, there were very few things that you could find to replace a mother's milk if needed. And so a mother, at least as Paul is writing this, some in the Greek society, in the Roman society, the upper echelons, would hire a wet nurse. They would hire a lactating woman to take care of and nurse their babies so the mother didn't have to. It was the closest thing they could find to formula. But Paul is not writing about that being the case. Because he says, like a mother with, or like a nurse with her child. So this is, Paul is speaking about the church as if they're his own child. And he's saying, you know, a nursing mother can't ignore a baby that decides it needs fed at 2 o'clock in the morning. And then again at 6 o'clock in the morning. And then again at noon. And 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and 5 o'clock. And when the baby needs fed, guess what? The baby needs fed. And Paul is looking at them and he's saying, as a mother's schedule revolves around the needs of this small child, providing for, nourishing, and what the baby needs, and they were being the same thing. They were dedicating themselves, their whole lives, everything, and wrapping it around the needs of this small church, of this infant church that was just beginning to grow in Thessalonica. And whenever there was a need that they could give themselves to, Paul is insinuating that we were giving ourselves to you wholly, fully, completely, as we could. And so they would give them whatever they needed as those needs arose. But like a working mother today, a mother then didn't just provide the nourishment that a child needed. You know, today a working mother may go out into the world and earn a part of a living for a family and then come home and give the baby or give the child those things they needed or need. In Paul's day, that mother would be responsible, though, for taking care of making sure that the baby had clothes, that the baby had food as it started to grow and begins to eat other things. And the mother would take care of those things that were necessities for the baby and the family, but the baby in particular. And the mother would simply go about doing what they could to meet those needs. And Paul, more like the mother of today, who's more likely to be working out in the community outside of just the home, Paul says that, you know, we were busy working to provide so that you didn't have to. Unless you've got a baby that's going to be involved in advertising or making of movies, guess what, or television, guess what? Your baby probably isn't going to bring you a lot of money. Paul, we look back to last week, and Paul says, you know, we didn't come greedy. We came like infants, you know. We didn't come hoping for you to make us famous or to provide for all of our needs. But this week, he says, even a step farther, we came providing for ourselves. We came, you know, you don't expect a baby to take care of its mother. Well, Paul is saying, as a mother, we're here taking care of ourselves. I love this word picture, and G.K. Beale in the commentary on 1 Thessalonians writes this, the word philopo occurs in the Greek Old Testament for a mother bird caring for her new young eggs, or her newborn young, or her eggs. She conforms her life to meet the needs of the new lives of her young, just like human mothers do. The mother must take the initiative to pattern her life around the newborn in order to properly meet the child's needs. Ultimately, she sacrifices her needs to meet the needs of her offspring. She is delighted to give her life to her children because she loves them. Paul reflected God's character before his newborn converts, and so should we toward new Christians and generally toward one another. Christians in a local church need to know one another well enough in order that they can know, pray for, and even meet one another's needs. Such behavior breathes the air of the first century church. We in today's impersonal technological age need to be more like our first century ancestors in the faith. I love that picture of a mother bird taking care of her young, her taking care of the eggs in the nest, because they have to keep them warm, they have to rotate them, they have to do things to make sure that those eggs have the greatest possibility of hatching and becoming young chicks. And they give up their own personal time, their own personal ideas to become a roosting mother. And then when the babies are born, they continue to take care of those babies, often providing for them before themselves. You know, they go out and they get the worms and they chew them up into little pieces and feed the babies, often before they eat for themselves. I am thankful, though, that we don't have to chew our food and feed it to our kids. That doesn't sound right. But Paul is saying to the church at Thessalonica, he says, we have rearranged our lives because you have needs. And we're doing our best to meet them. And then he says, going on about the mother, he goes from giving them the example, he says, but we also have this commendable conduct. He says, there are some things about the way we lived which are commendable. And he uses two words that mean righteous or well-lived, and we don't know why. He gives three words, and we don't know why he uses two of them that are synonyms, I mean almost identical synonyms for one another. And those mean, some have taken them to mean that you're right before God and you're right before man. That you are doing what God says, but you're also living in a way that is right before men. But either way, whatever he's trying to say, he's saying that whatever the standard is that you use, that we are living according to those standards. In other words, that there was nothing that could be said against Paul and Silas and Timothy that, if it was being truthfully stated, could accurately stick. Now, there were things that were said about them elsewhere. We read in the book of Acts that it said these men have turned the whole world upside down. Well, yeah, what Paul and Silas and Timothy were preaching, what they were teaching, would definitely turn the world upside down. The way that they were living might turn the world upside down in the Greek and the Roman cities and the Greek and the Roman context. Not quite so much among the Jews, who they probably looked a lot like. But there were charges that could really be brought that were substantial that would stick. Because they were living righteous and they were living holy lives. They were living according to the dictates of what God said. This is the way you are to live before me. And, you know, as Paul writes to the church in Galatia, when he gives us the fruits of the Spirit, he lists out the fruits of the Spirit, and then he says, against such things there are no laws. And what Paul is saying to the church at Thessalonica is the same thing that he was writing to the church at Galatia. He says, we have lived with love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control. That's the way we're called to live. That's a holy and that's a righteous life. And Paul says, we've lived that way among you. And you yourselves have seen, you know, you've tested the way that we've lived. As I was thinking about Paul and Silas, I my mind went to the story of Daniel in the lion's den. Before Daniel ended up in the lion's den, Daniel had established a way of life. And he lived holy and righteous before God, and he was living a good life before King Darius. And it says that the wise men who didn't like Daniel, they couldn't find anything against him except for his commitment to his God. And so they created a law that no one could pray to anyone but Darius for 30 days, and then they trapped Daniel because they knew he would continue to pray. Paul is insinuating that like Daniel was living in holy and righteous life, and the only thing that could stand against him were charges about the way he lived for God. That's how they were living. It doesn't mean that he was living a perfect life. Paul will admit that he didn't live a perfect life. He continued to deal with temptation. He continued to sin. But it does mean, what he was saying is that the overall character of the way he was working amongst the church at Thessalonica was holy and righteous and upright. And everybody there knew it. And we're called to live holy and righteous and upright lives amongst the world in which we live and who we try to take the gospel to, so that they will see the difference. And almost on a dime, Paul switches from the metaphor of being, well, first like being an infant to a mother, and now then he switches from being a mother to a father. And he says, we were like a father among you. And as he begins this, he begins to build on the Greco-Roman understanding of what it meant to be a father. But what it meant to take a child and to help them to grow up. And Paul says that we were like a father among you. And again, he uses two words that are almost exactly identical, especially when we translate them into English and try to find words that would fit. And he uses the word exhorted and encouraged. Other translations have different things, but exhorted and encouraged. And they both mean to comfort or to cause to be comforted or to teach. And as I was thinking about this and looking at this and thinking about what the Romans and the Greeks would have thought and what Paul would have thought as a Jew, and you look at those two words, exhorted and encouraged, and it really, what he's saying is that a father, you are training up your child, you're teaching your child things about life. And in both the Roman and the Jewish cultures, one of the things that they would have been teaching their child is societal skills. How do you interact with society? When you leave the confines of the house in which you were raised, how do you live as a member of society? And different cultures, different regions, different places have different ideas about exactly what it means to live in society. And Paul says that we came as a father, and part of what we were doing was teaching you how to live among society. The society that he was talking about is twofold. He's talking about the society of the world. How do we live in this world? But also, how do we live in the kingdom of God? How do we live among the people whose lives we interact with on a daily basis as we are members of the kingdom of God? And he says, these are the societal skills that you need to have. And a father would prepare a child and teach them in part by the things that they did, the things that they said. God wasn't saying anything completely new in Deuteronomy when he told the Israelites that you should train your child when you get up and when you sit down, when you walk along the ways and when you go to bed. No, you take every opportunity to teach your child. And the societal understanding is that a father is responsible for preparing a child to be a part of society. And Paul is saying that we did that. A second part of this encouraging and exhorting is job training. Now, children sometimes today still want to do whatever their moms and their dads did because they see their moms and dads as important people to follow in their footsteps. But in Paul's day, when Paul was writing this, most children simply took over the family business. Simply did whatever it was that mom and dad did. So if dad was a tent maker, the child would become a tent maker. If the dad was a stonemason, they would likely be a stonemason. If dad worked in the shipping business, guess what? You probably were a sailor. But you learned those trades, you learned those skills first from your father. And Paul is saying that we're giving you some on-the-job training. We're teaching you what it means to carry out the command that Jesus gave his disciples to go into all the world and make disciples. To be his witnesses throughout the world. Paul is saying, we're training you, we're teaching you, we're trying to help you understand what it means to follow Jesus and to serve. And one of the things that you find that they were also doing was teaching their children how to live in a family, especially sons, how you treat your wife. Even today, a young boy, a young man is likely to have learned as much about how to treat women from his dad as anywhere else. And that doesn't matter. Even if he doesn't ever know who his dad is, he's learning. And Paul is saying, we're teaching you how to... I love this because one of the illustrations that God gives about who we are in relationship to him is he calls us his bride. We're the bride of Christ. And Paul can say, I'm teaching you what it means to treat church as the bride of Christ. So he's teaching them how to live. He's encouraging them in teaching and training, but he's also saying that we're giving them the opportunities. We're giving them opportunities to learn. Of course, learning often implies failing. And Paul is looking at the church at Thessalonica and says, guess what? We're not going to get it right every time. But we're going to learn, we're going to grow, we're going to become what God is calling us to be. And then he uses this other word. He says, I implored you. I put it out there, what it means, and I encourage you over the top. I push you. I don't force, but I push you in the direction that you will live a certain way. And the idea there is that you will live a certain way among society. And Paul ends that thought and he says that it is to walk worthy of God. I push you out and I tell you and I give you every opportunity and I give you every chance, but I also try to point you always in the direction of walking a life, or in a life worthy of God. I think about it this way. I've heard often that people say, you know what your last name is, right? When they send children out at different times, they say, you know what your last name is, right? Well, don't embarrass us. And in Paul's day, in the day when he was writing, both in the Jewish and the Greco-Roman society, embarrassment of the family name was about the greatest sin you could commit. You didn't want to do something to bring dishonor or to bring shame on the name of the family. And so saying this as they push them out the door, don't embarrass our family as you live life. And Paul says to the church at Thessalonica, don't embarrass the family. Don't darken the name of God. You see, this is the purpose that Paul says he came to the church at Thessalonica. He says, we came to preach the gospel to you, and we lived among you, and you have seen the way that we live. He's saying, we came and we lived the life that matched the teaching that we were given. And he says to them, that is how you're supposed to live in the world. This means that we are to live in the world, yes, but we are to live distinct from the world. It means that while we stand against many forms of sins, and the world should know that, the world should know us more for the purity of our character than what we stand against. We should be known as people of purity, much as Paul could say that we were innocent like children. Or he could say that we were compassionate as a mother, and probably even as forceful as a father. You see, Paul can use all three illustrations in one short thing because he was trying to tell the church at Thessalonica, this is how we lived, and this is how you're supposed to live. And though some of the ways that those idealistic examples of children, mothers, and fathers may be different, the roles may be different today than they were in Paul's day, there is no less importance for us to understand that in some things we need to be innocent like children as we deal with this world. In other places, we need to be as compassionate as a mother. And sometimes we need to be as forceful as a father. Now, Paul could write to the church at Thessalonica and say, you know, we haven't been coming for personal gain. We haven't been looking for personal notoriety as we share the gospel with you, much the way that they would have expected the philosophers of their days to come in and to teach and expect the people to care for them and the people to provide for them. But Paul was saying to them, we want you to have a good memory of us. And we want to have a good rapport among you. We want you to remember us as people who live a life worthy of the God who has called us to be his people. And we want you to remember us as people who love you and care for you. And Paul can say to us that he wants us to live those kinds of lives. He wanted them to continue to grow in their relationship with God. And we always need to be growing in our relationship with God. He wanted to remind them to live well with one another. And we always can be reminded that we need to live better with one another. And he wanted them to remind them that they should have the characteristics sometimes of a small child who isn't greedy. A mother who is willing to sacrifice her own comforts and wills to take care of a child. And to live as a father, sometimes telling people the hard truth that they don't want to hear, not because it makes us happy, but because they need to hear it. And so I ask you this morning, to just consider how you might look and act like Paul in these different ways as you go out from here this morning and deal with the world around us, to deal with other believers who need to help or who need help to grow in our lives and walks, and then to change where we need to change, to live like mothers and fathers, like Paul said he was for the church.